Session number 16726, Mr. H. Bell, Reel 7.
Mr. Bell, Reel 7. We were talking about the Japanese positions in the Arakan, Mr. Bell.
Yes, you must remember that the Japanese have been fighting for many a long year. They were better at it than we were. We had no experience at all about fighting in the jungle. And it was scrub jungle, actually. It wasn't thick jungle, it was scrub jungle. And still very bad to get through. And as I say, As soon as our lads got on the hill, down came the steel shutters, and down came the mortar bombs from the hill. They must have had it all gridded off, and they could drop bombs, mortar bombs, whenever they wanted to. And they were no duds at it either. They were pretty good. So that was the situation there. As far as the military situation was concerned, and as I say, the people who arranged the campaign were clueless.
You mentioned open forward attacks against these positions. This was the kind of thing that you'd been basically not trained for, but they ordered into. Is that correct?
Yes. I can't tell you much more about that because as we're moving further up, I found that after the night time, I couldn't get up from the ground. I didn't know what it was, but it turned out to be malaria. And the battalion was moving up the road, and there was no way of going back. There was no way of getting back to hospital. All I could do was to go forward, and I couldn't walk. So they stopped the truck full of packing cases, a tarpaulin-covered truck. And they pushed me on the top of these packing cases. They slid me in under the roof. It was like an oven. And it moved out. And so I went forward like that to the next stopping place. And I was unloaded and pushed into some bushes. And neglected as being useless while they went about digging positions. It was hot because I remember them just allowing the people who were digging the dugouts were only allowed to dig for 5 minutes, and then they were out. Somebody took over. The temperature was about 110, I believe. It was terrible. So anyway, I lay there under a bush, and my mate Flacker, if you came, give me a drink of water. And it's rather vague, this, but I got on to a truck with casualties going back over. And as I say, when you've got malaria, you don't remember very much, but I got back to Dhaka, which was a tented hospital, very military. I laid in this bed, and I had my chart at the foot of the bed with my single solitary tape as a lance corporal hung on the chart to show my rank. And every morning, whoever was in charge of the hospital came round, and we had to lie to attention in bed. We had to lie to attention in the bed till he had made his rounds. It was a camp out of peace. I remember looking out of the open tent one day, and there were Indian sentries wandering about, and I saw this and instead he reached out in the grass and he hauled out a snake by the tail. About 4 foot long snake, and he cracked it like a whip and broke its neck and threw it to one side. So I can't tell you which, I don't know how long,
Was it a British hospital?
It was a British hospital, yes.
And were there any female nurses?
Indian staff, but British hospital.
Female nurses?
No. No. Looking back, no. Male nurses.
Would you say very, very regimental and strong discipline?
Very regimental. I say I had to lie to attention during rounds. And anyway, I
but the treatment that you got, though, was it good treatment, or was it an unpleasant period being in there?
I just got some form of quinine, was all. Very little treatment except just lie there and recover. Very little. Nothing outstanding.
The food in the hospital, was it okay?
I don't remember. I don't remember. I was a sick man. I was a sick man. I was on the bottom.
How does malaria affect you? What are the symptoms in there?
Shivering. Terrific heat. And then chill, shivering. You're right on the bottom.
Some forms of it can be very dangerous, can't it?
Yes, I'll tell you about that later on. I came across a form. If you remind me about the chap I saw like a mummy. Well, eventually I'm very, very vague about all of this part. Very vague. But I know I got out of the hospital as soon as I could, and we made our way up to just yon side of Mung Do to a camp which held all sorts of odds and sods. There were police, there were navy men, there was all sorts in this camp. And after settling in, wondering how we were going to get back to the unit, there was a couple of our lads with me. We got formed up into a section of 10 men with me in charge. I don't know what this was all about. It was on a hillside. And the first night we were there, all hell was let loose. Somebody fired on somebody else. Somebody fired on somebody else. And they fired back again. Somebody else joined in. There was tracer bullets flying all over the place. And we thought, it's safer up at the front. So we dodged out, we didn't report, got a truck that was going up, and we landed up to the, I got up to the battalion, thank God. It was deadly at that camp. Everybody was shooting at everybody else.
Was it the convalescent camp?
It was a reinforcement camp, people who had been in hospital and were going back to units, mostly. I can't think of anywhere else they'd be coming from, except I haven't been sick or something, but anyway. They were very nervous, trigger happy.
Can you say how long you'd been away from the battalion?
I can't. No. It's rather. If I had to, and raking my memory, I could probably fix on the spot within a month, possibly. By what happened after I got back to the unit, but I. At the moment I can't do that because it was somewhere about the Dunbeg incident, somewhere about then. But I did very little. I wasn't fit to do very much. I was a skeleton. But I stayed at headquarters and just did the odd jobs of maintenance and so on, and that.
Was the battalion heavily involved now in the Donbass area?
Yes, it was withdrawing. The battalion was withdrawing slowly but surely, and the Japanese were advancing. They couldn't do a thing. They were going through the hills and coming down and cutting the. You couldn't stop them. They're a good soldier, the Jap, you know, and you just couldn't stop him. And I remember particularly one beautiful moonlight night. Shall I tell you there, the moon shone so bright there, you could read a newspaper by it. Dead silence, and we were retiring. Not retreat, the British Army never retreats. We were retiring to a previously prepared position. The day before, we came down the beach, and the artillery kept firing salvos. We marched on in a leapfrog the other day, we came down the beach. But anyway, we're driving this night along the road, which is brightly lit, and it was quiet. It was oh so quiet. Not a sound. We were leapfrogging. I could see it as if it was happening now. And he was coming out, and there'd be a line of men lying across the road with the rifles in defensive position, and you leapfrogged to them, and they came back to you and went right. And as we retired, you could hear the dogs barking in the villages as the Japs came through as well. All the dogs started barking, you know, and so on. And we retired that way. We got to Mondo. Must have been Mondo. We eventually embarked on a coastal steamer of some sort.
What date would this be?
I can't tell you. I was still rather vague about all that sort of thing.
So you yourself hadn't really got involved in anything on this?
I hadn't recovered. I was still really convalescent in a way. I wasn't a fit man. You'll no doubt get other stories about that. I don't know whether you have or not, but there was a lot of to-doing about, according to Martin McLean, about being outfitted with bad ammunition. I don't know whether you've heard all this. Well, there is a lot of it. He still goes on about it now, about not being able to fire back the Japanese because I think it was Indian-made ammunition, which wouldn't fire properly and jammed. He blamed that for quite a number of losses in the battalion. This could be an incident before we went up into the Arakan. Our radio sets, the batteries came from the UK, and by the time they got to us, they were half dead. They didn't last very long. So they decided, in their wisdom, to have them made in India. That's fatal. You should never have anything made in India. Never. But they had the batteries made in India. Now, the 48 set is hinged, the upper part, which has the dials and everything on, has a canvas hood, and it tips back, and it leaves the battery compartment ready to put the battery in. It's a metal box. So we got the batteries. A day before we were going into action, we got these batteries, marvellous, lovely, gleaming new batteries, ready for action. Well, the people who made them had done the measurements. And they fitted inside the compartment, except for the fact you couldn't get them in. Because the top of the compartment turned inwards, about a half an inch at the top. when you put the battery on, it just stood in the top like that. So we had to get our jackknives out. We had to use a tin opener, open the bottom of the 48 set up with a tin opener, shove the battery in from the bottom, and tie it up with string. So if Martin McLean says the ammunition man's bad, I believe him. But, oh, another incident. It happened later on, but it fits this current state. We all carried a jungle knife, what they called a DAW. We didn't at that stage, but we did later on. But it fits in with the stuff that came from India, a big jungle knife which is about 3 foot long, very heavy at one end. The blade is about 4 inches wide, and about half an inch thick. Very heavy, used for cutting the jungle growth with, and that weight at the which is not pointed but is flat. And so we had these, and I said, lovely. And I got this da, what they call a da. And I had to go, I wanted some thick branches to roof my dugout with. So I went up and I got this lovely, about 4 inches diameter trunk. And I swung my door back, my jungle knife back, and swung it, and I gave it a belt. And I got electric shock right up my hand, up to my shoulder. It quivered. And when I looked, when I looked at the door, it was... about 4 inches from the end, it was concave. The edge had all buckled back. Soft steel, rubbishy steel. Wouldn't even cut wood. So, I say, if Martin says the ammunition was bad, I believe him. What with batteries and doors, that was enough for me. Most everything out of India was rubbish. My boots lasted me until 1944, and then they dropped off my feet, and I got Indian boots, which were atrocious. They were made for Indians with broad feet, and they were terrible to wear, but never mind. That's in the future. So where are we now?
You were withdrawing from Mongdo.
Yeah. Well, we got on this coastal steamer, 2,000 ton, I would say, round about that. Just before the monsoons, that was why we were pulling out. The monsoons were due, you see. The army didn't fight in monsoon weather. The Japanese did, but we didn't. So we withdrew, and we got on this steamer. I still wasn't in very good health. And shortly after we got into the bay, the monsoon weather started. The sea was a dark brown colour, with huge swell, a mountainous swell. This little steamer went up the side of it like it was going up a hill, paused on the top, and then slid down the other side. And shortly after I'd got on, I had to go to the heads. And very shortly after that, I was seasick. Now, we embarked and aborted. And I remember crawling back aft, round about tea time. I had been there all day, brought my boots up. Terrible. We eventually got back to Chittagong. Yes, to Chittagong. And we got up in the camp there, and then the monsoons broke. The monsoons broke, and we were in corrugated iron sheet roofing huts, and the rain on these roofs was deafening. It was like a roll of drums on the top. A very funny thing happened there. But the second day we got there, I heard this. Only thing at night, horrible, horrible croaking noise. Horrible it was. And I had a torch with me. So I say, we'll manage from the front then. You know, you could use a torch. And there was a tree there. A tree there with a hollow at the bottom, like a small cave. And that's where the noise was coming from. And I shone them. And it was an amazing sight. There was a ring of frogs, big frogs. There were a big ring around there, and they were all croaking in chorus. I'll never forget it, the most peculiar sight. It was a peculiar sight. Another peculiar sight I saw, actually, going back a bit, shortly in 1942, when the monsoon started then, I was out on a plain, no vegetation, no growth of any kind, just a flat, sandy plain, and the monsoon started. And within 5 minutes, what had been a sandy plain was alive with small frogs. Millions of them. You mightn't believe this, but it's true. I have heard about it, the monsoon frogs. Tiny little half-inch frogs jumping up and down. The ground was alive with them. Now, how that happens, I don't know. But it happened. I know it happened, I saw it, and I have heard about it, so it must be fact. But that, anyway, that's digressing a bit. But
what state was the battalion in? It had come through its action and was withdrawing, as you say. What state was it?
Very bad state.
Spirit low?
Spiritually low. Spiritually low. Yeah, the colonel sent for us. All NCOs, and he said, as far as I can remember, we've been through a bad time, we've taken a hiding. And he says, when we get back, the men are going to expect things to go easy, they're going to relax. It's your job to say they don't relax. Keep them at it, give them jobs, keep them at it all the time. That is the sort of state the battalion was in. We were beaten. We had been beaten. We didn't like it.
Were you still a Lance Corporal?
Yeah. I was a Lance Corporal for a long time. You see, in a signal platoon, I think I've told you before, there's a signal sergeant, a signal corporal, there was a storeman, and at the maximum, 4 Lance Corporals. If you want to remain a signaller, you can't get promotion unless something happens to somebody. You're stuck. So that was it.
From this camp that you've just described, did you go further back into India for a while?
Yes, we went back to our base. We were finished.
That's Ahmad.
The battalion was rotten with malaria and with defeat. Defeat. Everybody was sick.
The whole campaign
was a disaster from beginning to end, and I blame the people who planned it. To give 4 battalions the job of defending a 50-mile coastal road with hills was utterly ridiculous. Utterly.
Your base was Ahmednagar. That was the base you referred to. So what happened to you when you got back there? Did you get new drafts?
Yes, we got, because actually there's one fellow, Austin Stokoe, who was a young laddie. When I was getting married, he was a friend of my brother-in-law, who was just more or less an apprentice at work. He was only 18, and I was then 26. Yeah. So, you know, he had been a child, more or less, when I was at home. Just a child. He was a company man. I didn't see much of him. All right. Shall I? At that time, We got reinforcements. Rick figured it. I think it was the East Yorks from Bombay. They must have been there during peacetime. They were absolutely useless. They didn't fit in at all. They weren't like anybody from the start. I was just one of the lads. I don't know what happened, but they went back to Bombay, and we got these reinforcements out from England. I only remember the colonel having been the colonel. I don't remember any other officer being asked. But I say things are rather vague for me at that time. But
who took his place?
Little Brown, I think he came. Did he come in the Royal Barks or somewhere like that? He came from one of the other regiments. And he came there. A Lance Corporal has done much to do with the colonel. I really don't. I had no contact with him at all, except the routine. I'll tell you what did happen, which was a good thing when we got back. The order came out. When we had gone into action there, we had been English-style battle dress with punches and everything else, bayonets and... And we were told to take our equipment off, strip it down, and design an equipment which was suitable for jungle fighting from our past experiences, which we did. And from then on, we had no pouches, the shoulder straps buckled direct under the belt, and our toothbrush and razor and all the rest of it was wrapped up in the gas cape, and the gas cape was strapped to the back of the belt. We wore a minimum equipment which wouldn't get entangled in the bush. So that was one good thing that came out of it. They did learn these things, and we did start a new method of jungle warfare, which didn't involve me as a signaller. I signalled as usual, you know. It didn't involve me. We didn't take part in it at all. But the whole battalion then started this new type of jungle warfare. We were pretty good at it.
What changes have been brought? What changes to the way the battalion moved have the new jungle training brought? Do you know?
No.
And you weren't involved?
I wasn't involved.
It must have been difficult to carry a 48 set through a thick jungle.
Mm. Yes, yes. The aerial rod was a bit of it kept breaking off. Yes. Also, it was pretty useless. It was pretty... the wireless waves will not travel through wet jungle. They're muffled. You can't very well signal through. You had to find high ground if possible to signal. That's what we found. I suppose nowadays with modern radio, it'd be different altogether. It is different. They're much more effective now. But these were cumbersome, terrible to move through jungle with. I tell you, kept catching on everything you went through.
You'd had malaria yourself. Was that becoming really bad now in the
beginning? Yeah. Yes, it was, and the order came round. All of us who had malaria at least twice were to go to a hill camp called Mahableshwar for a fortnight, I think it was. A fortnight for treatment to... put us back on the path of health again. Well, that included me. I had had a relapse, another attack of malaria, since I got back, so that included me. I had a terrible time in the second attack. It wouldn't come out. It wouldn't break out. For 3 days. Once I remember I was out taking the squad on flag drill, and I collapsed. But the army being what it is, you can't just go sick in the army when you like. You have to wait for sick parade in the morning. There was so much sickness, and the battalion was in such a bad state health-wise, that the sick parade was at 6 o'clock in the morning. 6 o'clock. And you had to be perfectly dressed with all your gear out. It's at the stand there with all your gear laid out in front of you at a parade. At 6 o'clock in the morning, a sick man. This three mornings running I did that. And by that, it happened at night. By the time the morning came, the shivering spell had passed. It was over. And I wasn't normal, but I wasn't sick. The fourth time I was carried in.